Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the SG Finserv Q4 FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this call is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to the management. Thank you.
Hi, Jai Hind everyone. My name is Vinay Gupta. I'm the CEO of your NBFC, SG Finserv Limited. With me, I have my senior colleagues, Mr. Deepak Goyal, the Chairperson, Mr. Anubhav Gupta, Group Chief Strategy Officer, Mr. Sanjay Rajput, the CFO, and Mr. Lalit Gupta, Chief Business Officer. I'll just give a brief about the financial performance, which has been very, very excellent for the SG Finserv for the year ended March 31, 2026. We have done an operating income of 334 crores, 96% growth year-on-year basis. Loan book, 3,936 crores, posting a growth of 75% on year-on-year basis. Profit after tax, 128 crores, year-on-year growth of 58%. So this signifies the overall performance of the company. Similar performance has been witnessed in the Q4 also. In Q4, our profitability has gone up to 42 crore on the PAT, which is grown from 32 crore from previous quarter, 30% growth on quarter-on-quarter basis. Our AUM currently, 3,936 crore, is an all-time high, which is backed by our core business, which is supply chain, new business which we have added, and commercialized factoring business in the month of March. Our gross disbursement for the full year has been crossed the benchmark of 25,000 crore, which shows the entire digital capability and invoice financing capability which we as NBFC have. So this was the opening remarks. Over to MK.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on your touch-tone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Abhi Jain with AJ Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Am I audible?
Yes, please go ahead. You are audible.
Hi, Mr. Gupta. Mr. Gupta, my question is basically to understand the competitive advantage that your business model has, because obviously you have been maintaining a nil NPA, and I think even in your investor deck, you have guided for that you plan to maintain your NPA at nil. So I just want to understand, or can you help the investors understand the business model a bit better? I mean, how are you able to forecast that going forward also your NPA will be nil? That is my first part of the question.
So our core business is supply chain business. The inherent strength of supply chain business is because it has a tripartite relationship between the anchor, borrower, and the financer. Across all the NBFC and banks who are operating in the supply chain space, the metrics of the capital structure and the credit cost remains the same. For us, the advantage is this: unlike other banks or NBFC, our core business is supply chain. More than three-fourths of our business is supply chain. So that adds to our advantage.
Yeah, okay. No, that part I understand, but I wanted to get more flavor around how even within the supply chain group, right, yours is such a pristine quality, fair quality business. I mean, what advantages do you have? What is the business model in terms of how do you ensure that the customers or your borrowers have very little room to default? So just want to understand, is it the buffers around liquidity? Is it the buffers around the loan-to-value? I understand that in most of it, you're also doing, the invoicing finance, where basically you are dealing with grade A, end customers, and they pay directly to you. So that I understand. But can you give me more flavor? Because even within the supply chain cohort, maintaining a nil NPA or no NPA is unheard of. So if you just help us understand that.
A couple of things. One, we are doing only purchase financing, which is backed by invoice. So the end use is monitored, number one. It is very, very short-term in nature. It is not a lumpy, lengthy loans. Our average term cycle is 45 days. If you look at our disbursement done in Q4 versus our book, we would have done a disbursement around 7,700 crore against our book of 3,900 crore, which signifies that we have churned the entire book in 45 days on an average basis. So by giving a short term in nature with an end use monitored and invoice backed, and the beneficiary is also locked. So when the dealer is procuring from an anchor, we don't give hand over the money in the pocket of the dealer. We directly pay to the anchor, which ensures the continuity of that supply will remain only if they remain disciplined in my repayment, because they will procure further only when they pay me for the existing invoices. So it creates a churning and the stickiness between the anchor dealer and the financer. So that is the overall supply chain construct. On top of that, we have a very, very robust early warning, where we monitor the churning cycle of all our dealers on a regular basis. And wherever we see there is any challenge, we don't wait for the account to go into a bad shape. We chip in terms of our own relationship team. We do loop in our anchors also to make sure that the dealers remain disciplined in terms of the repayment capacity.
Can you give some more flavor around this early warning signal system that you have created? Can you give us more flavor around how data is, how you're using data? Because in today's day and age, I'm sure that, data is helping you a lot, and without data, to get any competitive advantage, it's not sustainable. So can you just help us understand this early warning signal system that you have created?
To put it simply, it is not very, very complicated. It is a very, very simple structure we follow. We have funded a particular procurement. The procurement has to translate into a sale. The sale translates into receivable. The receivable translates into cash. The cash has to come back to me as a financier to repay my existing invoices, so that the space gets created for the new procurement. Wherever we see this space is getting elongated, the dealer or the borrower is not able to churn it in a better manner, then that creates an early warning for us. And then we try and understand whether the receivables are stuck or inventory is stuck, or they don't need any further procurement any longer. So that kind of a ongoing process is there with us, which we follow across all our dealers.
Right. My final question on this is that since you're dealing with these grade A anchors, which helps you and gives you the confidence to go ahead and disburse, and obviously because of which the NPA cycle is 30 days. Now, as you're growing your book and eventually the speed at which you grow your book, do you think that there is enough space available to keep ensuring that you only deal with grade A anchors, where the delinquency will be very low? Or do you think that there is a saturation point after which you will have to, move to probably a grade A minus kind of an anchor, grade B plus kind of an anchor? So just give us a flavor of that.
So the scalability in this space is huge. Out of top 500 corporates, if we talk about, not even 100 are active in a supply chain space. So there's a huge space for the new anchors to follow the trend of the successful anchors to come and start doing supply chain, number one. Number two, the anchors who are already doing supply chain, their entire sales is not yet covered. That's back of the hand calculation. My understanding, 25 to 30% of their sales is only covered. Still, there is a lot of room left for those anchors to also deep dive and get the dealers onboarded under the organized supply chain programs. So the space is humongous. So there is no saturation I see in my side, at least for next 10, 15 years.
Right. And finally, so the guidance that you've given in the deck, is it for a prolongated medium term, like 3 to 4 years, or is this for FY27?
It is ongoing basis. I think this is the kind of guidance we will maintain on an ongoing basis. If I were to break it down, probably for FY 2027, our AUM growth may be not 25%-30%, it will be upward of 30%. But in a medium to long term, this will be the average of 25%-30%. Our aspiration on the AUM
Thank you.
FY 2027 is around 35%-40%.
Sure, sir. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Kushal Sajodia with Kushal Sajodia and Associates. Please go ahead.
Yeah, superb results. Just wanted to understand, having a clarity on two, three things on the financial aspect. In the financial results, I could see, there has been a rise in the employee benefit expense from 2 crore to 6 crore. 3.5 crore plus, if I add that 2.54 crore on account of ESOP, then cumulative, it approximately reaches 6 crore. So, of course, in the LinkedIn page, we have seen many employees have been added. So there have been a threefold jump in the employee benefit cost. Can you explain, any senior management or something have been employed or something like that?
No, Kushal, I think, you, the 2.5 crore which you referred was not related to this financial year. If you read this, 2.5 crore is mentioned as a footnote related to year ended March 31, 2000.
Okay, 2025. Okay, okay, okay. So it's only 1.5 crore addition in the employee cost in this current quarter, right?
Right.
Right. Just one more question I have regarding the AUM. Since around 350 crore, approximately 350 crore we have received through warrants. So, basically, that will be employed only in the current business, right? Not in the AIF-related business. Just wanted to understand that.
So there's no segregation, Kushal, on the equity. It's equity pool. We're currently sitting with 1,481 crore equity, putting the 21 crore incremental warrants got converted in the month of April. So it's a pool of equity. Currently, we are leveraged at 1.9x on the standalone NBFC. If, as and when we enter into the new businesses, with the same pool of equity will get used.
But, for financial year 2026, 2027, we are not thinking to go venture in, into new business, right? Or are we thinking of doing that?
So, Kushal, that there's a lot of groundwork is going on because it is subject to a lot of regulatory approvals. It has to pass the muster business plan. We need to have a right set of people. So it is subject to many things. So difficult for me to, you know, really visualize whether it will happen in FY 2027 or 2028, because it is subject to many things.
Okay. And now, the last question I have, it is not pertaining to only for financial year 2026, 2027. In general, I wanted to ask, in future, if you have a target to achieve future, basically to reach a higher AUM. So, at that time, what we are basically will we be funding through additional capital like preferential allotment, or are we thinking to borrow money from the banks or NBFCs to fund the additional AUMs?
So we currently have enough bank available with us, which are not even utilized. We have space available in the existing, already available limits itself to utilize further, number one.
So can I know the limit, sir? What is the current limit of the banks you have?
It is more than
Approximate, sir. I'm not telling you to give me the exact figure. Approximate, sir, by bank limits.
More than 3,000 crore.
3,000 crore. Okay, okay.
Right. It is more than 3,000.
Okay.
It will be somewhere between 3,000 crore-3,500 crore, number one. Number two, our leverage currently is 1.9. If you were to compare us with any other NBFC, I think the leverage of 3x-4x is acceptable leverage for the NBFC business. But we understand we are in the initial stage of our growth, so that's why we are going little cautious. But there is room left. There's enough headroom left to leverage ourselves, without being dependent on any fresh equity raise.
So basically, as per my understanding, with the bank limits you have are approximately 3-3.5, and the capital we have of 1,500, so we are well, basically, we can reach a AUM of 6,000-7,000 easily without asking for additional capital. Right, sir? If I'm not wrong.
10,000 crore is the my
10,000 crore. Okay, cool.
No, 10,000 crore of AUM we can easily reach in 3-4 years without being dependent on any fresh equity, because we will accumulate profit, and there is enough bank lines available, and more bank lines will get added. So 10,000 crore AUM with 3x leverage, we are not dependent on any fresh equity.
Okay. And sir, one last question. Sorry, I'm asking again. In the previous participant's question, you mentioned that in the current business, 3/4 of the business is coming through financing of supply chain. So what is that 1/4 additional component, where it is coming from, the additional income basically?
So that is the cross-sell which we do in our ecosystem. So when we meet the anchors and the dealers, so we know within that ecosystem there is a requirement which is beyond supply chain. I can give only a few examples without divulging too much detail, but if a dealer says, okay, hey, you are financing my invoices for the procurement, but I need some working capital also. Maybe I need some term funding for my business expansion also. Maybe I need some sort of a lab also. So those kind of requirement comes when we meet them. Although our cost of acquisition for that kind of a cross-sell business is virtually zero, but we end up doing that business also, which helps us also and helps our borrowers also.
Okay, great. Sir, I think, sir, my personal opinion, your 35% is very low. Your APL Apollo Group company target for 100% growth this year, sir. I hope so. All the best, sir.
Thank you, Vishal.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Parin Dala with Sage One. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Vinay. Good afternoon. Vinay, 4.8% ROA, you think is a peak that we have achieved or there is room to grow more? Second question is that what is the comfortable debt to equity that you or the organization has in mind, and by when do you think that leverage can be achieved? And the third question is little bit, can you explain a little bit on your Prex platform? I believe we have the RBI approval as well. And how do you intend to compete when 3 to 4 large platforms are already operational? So where does our right to win stay in that?
Sure, I'll answer one by one. First question first. Now on the ROA, I think 4.8% is a very healthy ROA. Anything more than this, it can go up to 5%. But at the same time, we may look at 4.5%. So I think ROA will range between 4.5% to 5%. It also is a calculation around leverage also. Because if our leverage goes up, the ROA tend to go down. The ROE tend to go up. So I think 4.5% to 5% will be our ROA. That is the kind of number which we have in our mind, number one. Number two, on the equity side, currently we are at around 2x leverage. As the management, we think we can go up to 3x. That is the number which we have in sight. But that will happen over a period of phase manner, maybe 2 years to 3 years. That we will not try to leverage ourselves on immediate basis because we are a very, very conservative lender. So we grow very, very cautiously. And the third on the factoring and trade. So the license of factoring has two angles. One is the bilateral factoring, which we have already commercialized and we executed the transaction. If you look at our results closely, 175 crore is the factoring book, which is outstanding on 31st March. So that has already begun. On the trades, we have already signed up the agreement. We have already onboarded the two trade platform, RXIL and M1 Exchange. We are evaluating the leads and sooner or later we will get live in terms of booking the trades factoring business also there.
When do you expect to go live?
I think this Q1 only.
Okay. And sorry, Anders, before that you said two platforms, I think. You are going to go on other platforms or have your own platform?
No. We don't plan to have any platform on the trades. We only participate on the existing trades regulated entities licensed by RBI. We don't plan to do because that's a different ball game altogether. That's not the business which we are into.
Okay.
We are a lender. Okay. We are not a fintech.
Understood. Okay. Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Mehul Panwani. With 40 cents, please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you so much for the opportunity. So since we are doing so well now, what other NBFC areas do we have planned to expand into?
Our focus will remain supply chain, but supply chain has multiple colors. We are already doing tier 1 dealer financing. We have started doing tier 2 dealer financing also. We have started banking with deep tier 2 dealers of tier 1 dealers. So that has been a successful testing run we have done in last couple of months. So that is the new business, the new territory we will enter into. Naturally, we will continue to onboard new anchors enter into new industries and continue to expand ourselves on the dealer financing. Third, factoring, as I answered in my previous question, you know, the factoring is just begin. That will continue to grow. Considering it's just a beginning, I think that will add another cushion for us to grow the factoring. Beyond the traditional supply chain, then the cross-sell business in terms of whether we are doing LAP or we are doing term funding or a standalone working capital financing, that's something which we keep on doing more of an opportunistic kind of transactions.
Okay. So my another question is around the geographical spreads. So are we across, I mean, are we pan-India or we are focused in certain geographies? If I am new to the company.
So we currently catering to 30 locations pan-India, but that 30 location is more of a hub. You know, from within one particular location, it covers around 100 kilometer kind of a radius. So currently, except the Northeast Seven Sisters, I think we are fairly present across the country. We have existing customer base on those all locations.
Right. And sir, some insight around the dealers. So, you know, are we specifically focusing in for dealers into certain industry, or are we, I mean, if you can throw some light around this.
So there's no specific industry criteria which we have in our mind. However, supply chain as a business works only in few typical industries. So we are definitely very big on auto, steel, construction, white goods, IT, IT peripherals. These are the industry which suits the supply chain structure. However,
right,
there are few industries like FMCG which remain aloof to, you know, supply chain kind of business, which that we'll continue to evaluate as when the opportunity comes.
Okay. And so what is the concentration in terms of our clients? So if we how many clients do we have for that AUM which you have mentioned in our opening remarks?
Our average ticket size for a borrower would be around 5 CR in terms of our outstanding AUM if I have to calculate. So the concentration is not much.
Right, right. Thank you so much, sir, and wish you the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Nikhil Chanak with Sanghvi Family Office. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Longer term, do you also get into the retail side of, you know, like mass retail? I read somewhere you're trying to get into LAP as well. So I know you said there's a lot of scope to grow in supply chain financing, but say in the next 2-3 years, what other segments are you going to explore? Would you get into, for example, housing finance and, you know, LAP you mentioned? So what other segments?
So as a DNA of our NBFC, we are only financing the business banks. Okay. So business houses, so we are not planning to enter into any retail consumer financing. As of today also we have nil, and we don't have any visibility to enter into that business, because that is not a business we understand as of now. When I said micro LAP, that micro LAP is also a form of giving a term financing to a business person who is seeking money to expand the business.
And understood. And in, you know, who do you see as competition? Which are the segments, which are the players are competing with you in this segment?
Honestly, you know, as a philosophy, we don't believe in competition. We believe in co-survival. So there's enough space which is available for everybody. So there's a one set of banks, then the large pedigree banks, then there's a large NBFC, then there's a middle layer NBFC like us. So I think there's a space for everybody, and we play in our own space.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Amit Jain, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi sir, thanks for the opportunity. My question is more around PSB exchange. So right now on PSB exchange we have SBI, Bank of Baroda and other PSU banks. My question is, in 3 years time, what does supply chain finance market will look like, and where does exactly NBFC like SB Finserv fit in that structure? This is more of a forward-looking question, but I just wanted to have an understanding about this from you.
So my personal opinion on this is like this. You know, if the more banks are joining and doing supply chain business, it only gives a confidence of the borrower and the industry on a supply chain business. Today, the large part of financing is done through a mode of CC, OD, WCDL, term financing. Supply chain financing continues to be niche. My personal belief, again, if more banks and more players are coming to the market itself will grow. If the market will grow, there will be space for everybody to grow.
Yeah, that's it. I had only one question. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Janvi Patel, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Congratulations on your best results so far. I just wanted to know the guidance for the next 2 years.
Well, thank you so much for your well wishes, ma'am. I know, first of all, you know, for the next 2 years, we just want to do what we have done this year. Just repeat. No, the excellent results we have posted in Q4 and FY26, we just want to follow that same path in FY27. FY27, the way we look at our current capital structure, the current, we have raised the fresh equity also, I think the numbers looks more promising because we have more capital to support our growth engine. Maybe the numbers as we are seeing on the paper today, the numbers will be far more better in FY27.
Okay. Thank you, sir. All the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Raghav Bhagoria with Lindsay Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Am I audible?
Yes, sir. Very much audible. Yeah. Please go ahead.
So what will be our share of loans given to group company entities?
So all these are related party transactions are reported to the board and, you know, approved by audit committee. Our related party exposure would be what, lesser than 100 CR currently, Sanjay?
Less than 100.
Less than 100 crore.
And what would be the loans to, you know, the channel financing for the group company? What would be the share amongst the overall?
I think it should be around 30%. Okay. 29 to 30%.
Sir, is my understanding right that, you know, the recent increase in steel prices has really helped your AUM?
Steel prices have not gone up in the month of March. This is my understanding. If you ask me, we have received massive collection in the last week of March. Our AUM would have been even closed higher. But if you look at our average AUM, you know, our average AUM for the full financial year has grown even higher than our end of period AUM. We closed our average AUM for FY26 at 2,640 crore against our average AUM for FY25 at 1,282 crore. The growth is 106%. We have doubled our average AUM. So that cannot be a one-off instance because of steel price rise.
We've also done a lot of volume, but just trying to understand if it helped a lot.
No, it did. It did not. I was just trying to give you a more elaborate answer that our numbers have gone up, profitability has gone up, so it is not one-off steel price rise as a reason.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Manish, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. So first of all, congratulations on the outstanding performance this quarter. So I have one question. Do you think we've been conservative in our guidance, at least during the calls which happened during the last two quarters, and especially considering the super performance that the company has shown this quarter? Have we in any way kind of undercommitted but believe that we will overachieve our guidance the upcoming year?
Yes, you are right on your observation. We were conservative last quarter because there was reasons. There was a change in management. There was new management coming, new people coming. So we wanted to go a little slow. We wanted to consolidate ourselves and see in which direction we want to grow. But undercommitting, over-delivering is something which suits best to our philosophy. Today also when we are looking at, you know, giving a guidance of 25-30% AUM, that again is a conservative guidance.
Yeah, so it was the reverse under the previous management. So I thought this quarter was an outstanding performance, especially in light of the guidance or maybe the gloomy picture which was being portrayed during the last quarter. So considering that, I think it has been a phenomenal performance. So thank you, and wishing that the company does much more better in the days to come. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Manish. But two clarification. Number one, it was not the previous management who gave this guidance. I myself had given that lower guidance because we thought we will be conservative in our guidance. Number one. Number two, we have not portrayed any gloomy picture. It was more of interpretation. We were very, very clear that, okay, this is a conservative number we are giving. And because we are the new management, new change in hand, we wanted to give a conservative guidance. It was very, very clearly articulated that we are doing conservative guidance.
Yeah. Look, I used the word gloomy because of the fact that the guidance which was given, right, it was not for one particular quarter, but it was across various quarters. So there were things which were being told that we will achieve some X amount of AUM profitability and so on. And later on, there were clarifications being given in terms of exit run rate and so on. So I understand, I only hope that the conservative is a lot more conservative in terms of kind of giving any guidance going forward. But net-net, yeah, I don't want to kind of take away the good performance that has been shown this quarter. So thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Praveen Kumar with Pune Stock Broking Limited. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, yes, you're
right. Hello. Sir, my first question is, like what are we doing in terms of best, like how are we managing NPLs as they are zero? So what, what we are doing different that we have one of the best NPLs in the industry. So I wanted to understand the process or everything.
So we are not complicating anything. We are keeping very simple. If we have given a loan to somebody, we need our money back along with interest on time. And that is the message which we give it to our people and our customers time and again. Whenever the situation arises, the dealer or any borrower is in genuine difficulty, their receivables are stuck, their inventory is not moving. So we work with them along with the anchor. So there's only not one person, the lender, who need to knock the door of the borrower. There are two people now. And it does not only impact me in terms of the bad loan book, it does impact the anchor also, because in that particular territory, if a dealer is not paying me, the dealer will not get the fresh goods. If the dealer does not get fresh goods, it impacts dealer. It also impacts the anchor, because anchor is virtually not able to generate sales from that particular territory where the dealer was operating. So it is in the best interest of all the three entities, the lender, the dealer, and the anchor to come together and find a solution.
Okay. Okay.
So that's as simple as
that. Yeah. Okay. Sir, also I wanted, like differentiation, like what percentage is in export or something like in domestic? Is there anything, any number? Like, because recently there has been this war impact, and so I wanted to understand, like basically things are improving now, but if anything goes wrong.
No, I understand your concern. So two things. Number one, our entire AUM business is 100% domestic. We are not doing any import-export business. We are not financing that, right? Our entire book is only domestic. However, we are very, very conservative, vigilant. We have done our own prognosis of assessment of the situation in terms of borrower, whether this has any indirect impact on the borrowers. But as we speak today on this call, there is nothing which is there in my side which is impacting them severely that I need to be worried.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir, and all the best.
Thank you so much.
The next question comes from the line of Arun Gajaria with Omkara Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir, and thank you for taking my question. Am I audible?
Yes, sir, audible. Please go ahead.
Sir, until I think second quarter, we should draw the ROA tree for us. but we stopped doing that since the third quarter. If you could just draw an ROA tree for especially this quarter.
We can do so, but out of 4.8%, if our NI percentage roughly would be what, 7.7%, cost to income is around 15%, and our return on asset is 4.8%. So I think so that's broadly the composition of ROA.
Okay, so since I think the last year our ROA had kind of shrunk by around 100 bits or little more. So, if you could shed some light on that as to why that happened.
Our leverage was virtually zero for 6 months in last financial year, which is why the ROA appears very high. But on the absolute terms, if you look at the profitability, the net interest income, the PBT, everything has gone up. Our interest cost is low because for around 4 to 5 months, our borrowing was zero. And we were only doing business purely versus equity. So, although the ROA may appear at 5.8% or 5.9%, which you are alluding to, but return on equity would have massively gone down because the leverage was virtually zero.
Okay, and what would be our leverage levels now and what would be our comfortable range?
So, currently our leverage is 1.9, broadly let's say 2x, and our comfortable range is 2x, but our aspiration is to go up to 3x over the next 2 to 3 years.
Okay, and our forward targets remain in life, right? As we had stated.
Yes, 25 to 30% CAGR remain our guidance for the AUM growth.
Okay, and just alluding back to question that one of the earlier participants had asked, what would be a size for one of the like bigger players in this space, and who would be your like prime competitors? What would be the AUM size for the biggest players in this space, for the bigger players? Considering that you said that this is kind of an untapped space, we are still getting into it. It's still a developing story, right? So
broadly, 5-6 large NBFCs and banks, each one should be dealing with 10,000 crore to 15,000 crore kind of a AUM in a supply chain space. So this is my market insight. But the overall market, if I were to add PSU banks, everybody, I think the market size would be somewhere upward of 1 lakh crore.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. And all the best.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Rajat with Yashvi Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So what will be our average AUM for the quarter?
Sorry, I didn't get that.
So what will be our average AUM for the quarter?
Average AUM for the quarter? 3 to 65.
3 to 65. Oh. And sir, we are seeing a huge jump in fee income. So what is the reason for that?
It's just a focus on the fee income. I think nothing more.
Sir, but 6 crore fee income, sir, the average run rate was around 1.5 crores and we are seeing 6 crores in this quarter.
No, so I will honestly accept the fact that we were not going a little aggressive to the kind of fee income, which the kind of potential is there. I think we were not going as aggressive as we could. So 6.5 crore fee in Q4, it's not an exception. I think this will become a norm. You will see in few quarters more.
No, sir, I'm asking the reason for the delta which we are getting here. Sir, in Q3, it was 1.5 crores. In Q4 last year, it was 1.89 crores. This quarter, it is 6.23 crores. So what is the reason for such a huge, big increase?
Well, I'm thinking, that is like, in Q3, we have not able to generate that kind of fee which we could have or we should have, you know. Only thing is that, okay, we as a business strategy, we have focused, okay, there's a potential to generate fee, why to leave that fee on the table? Ask the customer to pay fee. Customer will negotiate and in the negotiation, we'll still end up earning something.
So what kind of fees are we getting on our disbursements?
It ranges. It ranges from maybe 10 paisa, 20 paisa, 25 paisa, 50 paisa also. few cases maybe 1% also. It really depends upon the client.
Okay, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Abhi Jain with AJ Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, yes, you're audible, please.
Sorry, so just one more question. Since, you know, you have taken over, obviously, you have done a good job of being conservative, and that is much appreciated, especially when you're in the financial space, right? I mean, I don't understand management, which are optimistic in the financial, in the NBFC space, especially. So, kudos to you on being conservative, and if you overachieve it, that's fine. I just want to understand, all part of your, you know, guidances are conservative, except for the provisioning and the, you know, credit cost side. So, any reason, I mean, would it help you to have some kind of buffer built in there in your forward guidance? I mean, obviously, if you are targeting nil NPA and you're focused on that, you might end up achieving it. But wouldn't it hurt, right, if you build in some buffer there? Because you yourself are conservative, you're running the show, so you know it better, right?
No, but Abhi, we have accumulated a provision of 18 CR in our balance sheet if you look at our capital structure. Because we follow the Indian accounting standard, we cannot deviate from that from the expected credit loss theory. If there is nil NPA, we can only provide expected credit loss as per the Indian accounting standard. Over and above that, whatever provision we need to make beyond the ECL as per the accounting standard, we need to go by the RBI guidelines. So there are well-defined two regulations we need to follow. So I cannot, even have to create a buffer, I am not allowed to create that buffer because the regulator will not permit me.
No, I understand. On the provision side, I understand. I just wanted to understand in terms of the guidance of the NPA. I mean, because you're conservative on all the other parameters, wouldn't it help if there was some sort of buffer built in terms of the guidance on NPA also going forward? I understand. I mean, the ambition is, and you have been able to achieve nil NPA, but just thinking from my view perspective.
No, I think it is only about the messaging. You know, we are 78 people as SG FinServ. This presentation, this guidance is read by our people also. So our philosophy and theory is very simple. We don't want to lose even 1 rupee in the market. So I don't want to give any message that I'm okay, tolerable to lose some money. By design, by target, we are not going to lose money. So the guidance will remain nil and clear.
No, appreciate that. I think you are embarking on something which will not happen in the Indian financial industry space. So if you're able to achieve it in the middle and the long term also, I would be fantastic.
No, I'm not living in any fool's paradigm. I know lending business is a risk business. We may lose money. We will lose money. But I'm not targeting to lose money.
Yeah. No, appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Mehul Panjwani with 40 cents. Please go ahead. Mehul, your line has been unmuted. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello. Sorry, I was on mute. Sir, thank you so much for the follow-up. Sir, I had a question about our business model while we're expanding into earlier responses of another participant. You are saying that, you know, there's an anchor and the anchor doesn't want to lose, you know, the market, the sales. And so are you talking about, can you just please elaborate because I'm new to the company. With an example, like what anchor is like the person, the company's products which the dealer is selling. Is that what you are alluding to?
I'll give you an example. I think that will be better for to understand. You know, let's say Tata Motors is the OEM manufacturing the vehicles and they are selling those vehicles to the dealers present across the country.
Right.
Consumers like you and I will go to the dealer and buy that vehicle. Now, there is a particular location where the dealer is present. For the OEM like Tata, it is extremely important that vehicle dealer remain open. Well, liquidity is available, well, funding is available, and so that they continue to sell their vehicles to the dealer. If tomorrow if the dealer were to go shut, or by virtue of my legal agreement, the Tata is not allowed to sell the vehicles to the dealer, then what will happen? The Tata will lose the business catchment in that particular territory. The dealer will also lose the business. We will also lose the business. So it becomes more of a tripartite relationship between the OEM, the dealer and the financier. So what we do, we give a financing to the dealer saying, hey, take this money, pay to Tata to buy vehicles. Whenever you sell this vehicle in the market, get the money and pay it back to me. Once you pay it back to me, the more limit will be available again. Use that money and keep on doing that in cycles again and again and again and again. Tomorrow, right, if they don't pay me, then we have a clear agreement that the OEM will stop supplying any further vehicle to them till my overdues are clear. So this is the strength. Right. This is the business model. I hope I was able to explain it.
Yeah, that was very well explained. Sir, one follow-up question on this one itself. So, so whenever we are in the agreement with our dealers or our clients, so always the anchor is included in that contract, or how does it work out?
Yes, yes, all the documents are executed, it's well covered. And for the borrower end use is very, very clearly defined that you can use money, in my example, you can use this money only to pay to the OEM for buying the goods. So the goods are defined,
okay,
from whom they can purchase is defined, and how the process flow will happen, because I don't give the money to give to them. I give money directly to the supplier.
Right. So sir, are you saying that each of our borrower, every borrower to whom we are giving lending money, we are having this kind of agreement where the OEM is involved, OEM or the anchor is involved?
Not every borrower. Wherever we are doing supply chain, typical dealer financing, there are different structures. The factoring may have a different structure. Vendor finance may have a different structure. Purchase invoice financing may have a different structure. Similarly, you know, so every product has a different nuances. I was only explaining you the core strength of a supply chain, typical supply chain business, which is our strength and which we are doing.
Right, right, right. Okay, sir. Thank you so much. This was amazing. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Manish, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity again. Sir, I was looking at your PPT, page number 17, and the profit guidance that you have for the subsequent year, 30 to 35%. Now, is that on the entire year's profitability or is that on the exit run rate?
No, you're talking about the return on asset and return on equity?
No. I'm talking about the PAT guidance.
Full financial.
On your PPT. Yeah, it says 30 to 35% CAGR. Does it PAT guidance?
This is the growth on the PAT. This is not a PAT percentage of the AUM. This is the growth on the PAT of previous year PAT.
Okay, all right. So it is not for the subsequent year, because maybe I'm misreading it. PPT says guidance. So that is why I thought this is the PAT for the subsequent year, the guidance for the subsequent year.
That is not the case. No, this is the guidance for subsequent years. But you were saying, okay, it is whether on the closing book. I'm not saying it is not. The PAT guidance is not on the closing book. The PAT guidance is on the PAT of the previous financial year. So when we are saying, I can give an example, we are saying if...
I understood. So I just wanted to kind of clarify, is it on the part of the previous financial year or is it on the exit run rate? Reason being, the Q4 numbers were much better. So if this guidance is on the Q4 numbers, then obviously the PAT number would be much higher next year. So that was... Understood. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Akhilesh Kumar, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to know, like earlier quarter, you gave me the backup of top sectors where you are active right now, and how in this quarter you are expecting them to perform. This is like earlier, I think construction was there at the topmost. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
So today also the construction industry continues to be our number one in terms of the industry breaker. Number two probably would be automotive and so on.
And this mobile, I think the vendors, I think you started, how they are in percentage, right?
Mobile standalone would be maybe 2% of our AUM today.
Okay. But the percentage-wise, still the construction sector is the highest one. Maybe 30, you said, last quarter?
Around 30%, you can say.
Yeah. So we are not seeing any stress 30, on...
35. Not 30, I think 35% would be our construction.
Okay. You are not seeing any stress in any of the top sectors where you are active right now in this quarter? Because of these so many events happening?
No, we are not seeing any stress as of today, but we are not remaining ignorance of the fact that there can be a potential stress. So we are engaging our borrowers and anchors, and we remain very, very vigilant.
Okay, because we were seeing reports about like say industry getting slowed down because of the availability of those fuel and gases, and because maybe we are in steel as well, right?
You're right, but there is, I may have a liberty to ask you a counter question. If the imports of the steel goes down, mm-hmm. I think the Indian domestic manufacturers tend to get benefit also. Mm-hmm. So it's yet to see, the impact on the domestic business, domestic manufacturers, domestic distributors, the impact will be positive, negative, neutral. The things are evolving. Very difficult to, pinpoint today.
Okay. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you so much. First of all, thank you MK team for organizing this conference. Really happy to have all the investors asking questions. As SG FinServ, as your NBFC, we continue to remain a very conservative lender. So that is our philosophy. So that's why our guidance on the NPAs continues to be nil. We would want to operate keeping finger crossed without incurring any delinquency. However, on the business momentum, we will continue to ride. Our incremental equity which we have raised in Q4, it is going to benefit us to maintain this momentum in Q1 and the subsequent quarters also. On a medium to long term, our AUM growth guidance is 25 to 30%. But if I were to dissect it between FY27 and years further, I think 35 to 40% is the guidance which we are aspiring to achieve as a growth in FY27. Profitability perspective, we continue to operate with the return on asset of 4.5 to 5% kind of a range, with return on equity of 14 to 16% kind of a range, and cost to income between 13 to 17% range. And that is the number which we are given as a budget to ourselves, and this is the guidance we are announcing into the investors also. Thank you so much. We look forward to interacting with you again in the Q1 results conference.
Thank you, sir. On behalf of MK Global Financial Services Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.